Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased today to be able to talk with you about the Seed Savers Exchange. We can talk about heirloom seeds and a whole lot more with our guest, Brian Stewart. He's the field manager at Seed Savers Exchange. Degree in agronomy from Purdue University. He's been working with vegetable crops and doing seed production professionally for 10 years. And so certainly can answer your questions, I'm pretty sure. And we'd love to hear your experiences as well with heirloom seeds. What's your favorite to work with? Join in. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Brian Stewart, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Larry. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with you today.
We have talked about the Seed Savers Exchange so many times on Garden Talk, but I know there are people who aren't familiar with its history. Can you talk about what the Seed Savers Exchange is all about, how it got started, and what's it all about?
Sure. Yeah, it got started back in the 70s. The founders were Diane Whaley and Kent Whaley. They saw a need out there. Diane had a couple of varieties that of her grandfather's that she really feared would become extinct, and they started the organization as a way to bring people together to preserve all of these varieties forever, essentially.
And these are old what we would call heirlooms. What is an heirloom seed, or how would you define it?
Sure, our definition of heirloom seeds are just any varieties that are passed down from generation to generation within a family. Usually, these are non-commercial varieties, but we also maintain in our collection historic commercial varieties that at least date back before 1950.
How many varieties, heirlooms, do you have? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, in the collection, we have over 20,000 varieties in the collection.
That is so
quite a few.
That's amazing. Well, now somebody might ask, why save, or why worry about these seeds? Why save these seeds?
Oh, well, it's just keeping our garden, our gardening and agriculture history is very important, and there's so many good stories behind these varieties, and so many potential uses for the future as well, whether that's with breeders or just appreciating the usefulness that these varieties have always had.
We have, and I have in front of me a copy of your book of everything that you've got for this year. Well, not everything, probably.
Yep. So the catalog that a lot of people recognize first when they think about Seed Savers is actually just a small part of what we do, and primarily, I like to think primarily what we do is we manage a yearbook, and what that yearbook is it's a large exchange among our members, in which we have over, how many members do we have? We have about 13,000 members as of now, and so our main purpose of our organization is facilitating participatory preservation amongst those members. So essentially, they're doing a lot of the work, if not most of the work. So that's really important to our organization. And then we manage the collection, our own collection of those over 20,000 varieties, so we are an active player in that participatory preservation. So in that, the yearbook that I was talking about, or the exchange, as we call it, is this year there were 16,000 unique varieties available in the yearbook. So that's a ton of varieties available. And here from the farm, we're an active player in that exchange, and we contributed over 4,000 varieties to the yearbook. So,
so you've definitely got your participation in there for sure.
Well, sure, yeah.
We have callers online already with questions for you. Shivoni in Viroqua has a question. Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I love saving seeds, and I'm actually breeding new varieties of winter squash and have some really great ones going. But my question is one that I have a friend who was a long time, very top person involved in Seed Savers, and he told me last year that he had left the organization because he was very disturbed that all the seeds that have been sent are not being saved anymore, and especially some varieties of corn, Indian native corn, were being let go, and the people who were making the decisions he didn't think were qualified to decide what to let go and what to keep. And so he said the budget was a consideration, and the organization wanted to spend money keeping the grounds looking nice and stuff like that. But he was deeply disturbed by that, and since he told me that, I have been disturbed by that too, because I think that when people give Seed Savers seeds, they presume they're being grown out often enough to keep the variety going. So I wondered if you know anything about that and what basis the decisions are made on upon which varieties to let go extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. That's sort of a tough question for me. But as the field manager, I can sort of answer it this way: is that, you know, our number one priority is to make sure that, you know, one of our number one priorities is to make sure that varieties do not go extinct. So we want to focus. We want to do just like you hit on about that. We want to make sure that everything that we can manage our collection properly. So we just want to make sure that we can do everything that we're doing well. That's very important. And we do have a limit on what we are a nonprofit and have a limit on what we're able to do. So we just want to make sure that we. And I don't know exactly what the caller is talking about specifically, but I think we have a lot of conversations about we want to do everything that in our collection as well as we possibly can, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, how do you determine whether or not a seed? How does a family heirloom introduced? How is it introduced to Seed Savers?
Sure. So we have our collection and our preservation department. We function a lot like a museum. So we have an accessions policy in which all incoming accessions, they have to meet that policy. And there's quite a few details to that. But you know, again, we prioritize food crops, and then from there we kind of. Do family heirlooms is our main priority for sure, and then we do historic commercial varieties. And I also should mention that all of these varieties have to have some history in the United States as well.
Okay, and so someone sends in, if someone sends seeds, they need to send sort of a history. Or I imagine there's some sort of standard kind of form if you're
exactly, and we have someone on staff that with each incoming donation or potential accession, they will vet those and determine if they meet the standards for us to maintain them.
And then, do you grow out those seeds or some of them? Some of the seeds.
Yeah, exactly, and that's my main responsibility here at Seed Savers. So. Every year we grow, you know, we're constantly monitoring the gene bank and the seed vault and doing germ tests and checking on quantities of seed. And that's where we regenerate and increase seed based on the quality or quantity that remains in the vault. And that's where my job really comes in, is, and that's the seed production part of it. So Each year, it's about 500 varieties we actually grow out and save seed from on the farm here every year. And there's a reason. There's reasons for that number, which I'm sure a lot of your callers are already familiar with. It's because that's the capacity that we have to do it based on isolation distances and those kind of things for producing seed crops. So about 500 each year, our curator will prioritize which ones need to be grown out, which ones are most important to be grown out, and then those are the ones that will grow out every year. And then additionally, we have a very large trialing and evaluation program in which another 500 varieties are grown out on the farm. Encourage visitors to come out and check out all these varieties. You can see easily over 1,000 different varieties of vegetables on our farm every summer.
Every summer. And actually, Chuck on Facebook wanted to know if you'd share information about touring the farm and when is the best time to go.
Sure. I would definitely check out seedsavers.org, our website, and check out all our cool events. But as far as kind of the beauty of the farm and the gardening stuff, I would definitely say, just like in your own home garden, middle of the summer is a great time. Mm-hmm. And then closer to August, a lot more things will be mature and ready, and you'll be able to see some fruit qualities and those kind of things.
Well, you're looking at 1,000 different varieties. How many acres on the farm?
The farm itself is about 890 acres.
So
it's a big farm, but it's rolling, and we have a lot of hay and that kind of stuff. And when you're growing things for conservation, like I am, you don't need huge quantities of seed, but you still have to make, even if you only have 20 tomato plants, you still have to put 100 feet between them and whether you have 1,000 plants or 20 plants, so.
Oh, yeah. I understand exactly what you're talking about there, Brian. Brian Stewart, our guest today, the field manager at Seed Savers Exchange, talking with him, well, mostly so far about the exchange itself and its sort of background and history. We can certainly talk about varieties. We can talk about seeds and planting seeds. You may have some questions about all that. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have some experiences to share as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Brianne Chesso, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk. Just to let you know, next week on Garden Talk, we'll learn about gourds and the upcoming Wisconsin Gourd Festival. Looking forward to that, talking with the gourd gal, and I'm looking forward to talking with her. And great to have with us today, Brian Stewart. Brian's field manager at Seed Savers Exchange. He's got a degree in agronomy from Purdue University. He's been working with veggie crops and doing seed production professionally for 10 years. So lots of good experience to share with you and with me, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's see, with callers online, let's go to John in Lake Halley area. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for answering my call. I had a quick question about, I recently heard about the Doomsday Seed Vault in Norway, and I was wondering if your plan is anything like that, or if you know anything about it.
Okay.
Sure, yeah. I think it's plan, in general, its plan is the same as our plan, as far as our vault goes and the Norway vault goes. You know, we are, our intention is very long-term storage.
Okay. Do you work with them at all?
Yeah. So, Yeah, so I'll take that opportunity to kind of describe what we do, what I do, or what we do in our department with the seeds that I'm helping to grow. And that is a portion of the seed that we grow out here every year. A portion of that goes into our vault for long-term storage. A portion of that goes to Fort Collins, to the USDA Gene Bank. And another portion goes to Svalbard in Norway. And then another portion is held for distribution to our members for them to gain access to the seed that we have here in our collection.
And a vault is, you know, I think about a bank vault. What is a vault?
Yep.
What's it like?
Well, it's underground, and it's held at negative 18 degrees, and it does have an alarm on it, so it's kind of like a bank vault.
Okay, there we go. John, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Bob in Lancaster has something for us, too. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling. Bob, are you there? No, we lost. Must have lost Bob. Well, actually, I have his question. I can see his question. Wondering if you save things like nuts, like acorns or other kinds of nuts.
Nope, we don't really do much of that. Nope.
What? So the range primarily is fruits and vegetables, right?
Yep, and my job is all seed crops, which is mostly seed propagated crops, which is mostly all your vegetable crops, and then some grain crops as well. But we also have an apple collection here on the farm that is over 1,000 acres or 1,000 varieties, includes 1,000 varieties. I'm sorry. We also have a grape collection and a horseradish collection and an allium, a perennial allium collection. So we have a lot more going on than just your basic seed production here on the farm as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I was looking through your catalog, and one vegetable that really struck me, and it's on page 20 of your book, and I'm not sure of the pronunciation, it's Shioggia. Shioggia, it's an Italian.
The beet?
Yeah, and with this beautiful red and white sort of target shape when it's cut open.
Yeah, that's this beautiful, beautiful variety.
Oh, my goodness me. This is really, it says, as you say in your catalog, it's a feast for the eyes.
Yeah, some good descriptions in there for sure.
Oh, yeah, and it says wonderful for fresh eating and pickling. So, you know, if I'm looking at something like that and saying, I've got to have one of those. I've got to try those.
Yep.
Where do they, give me a little information on that particular beet or about planting seeds for that particular beet.
Yeah, I mean, what comes to my mind is just, you know, kind of maybe the number one advantage to being an heirloom gardener is just that the diversity is so much greater than what you can just pick up in the supermarket. You know, you can't often pick up a Chioggia beet at the supermarket. You can definitely pick one up at the co-op or at the farmer's market for sure. But even beyond that, if you grow your own, the possibilities are endless.
Oh, man, it just looks so delicious. And beets are kind of big right now, I think. Do you sense that in terms of sales or interest in beets?
I mean, I love beets, so, yeah, I would believe that.
I was just reading somewhere the other day where beets are kind of turning into kind of an in vegetable.
Yeah, yep.
And now's
the time it's getting to be the time to plant them as well. So
yeah, so can you are they early season crop, aren't they, or fairly early?
Yeah, exactly. I would recommend just any time during May getting out and getting those sown, and even if in April would be fine too, as long as you're looking out at the long range forecast and you don't have a lot of cold weather below the upper 20s or so. So they're definitely a hearty vegetable, but they're a little on the tender end of that list.
Yeah, they look just... I'm just looking at this. I want to eat one right now. That's what I want to do. Oh, my goodness. Margie in Madison called in. Couldn't stay with us. She says her son-in-law sells seed for a large seed dealer. Is there a place for people like him to get involved in selling heirloom seeds and, you know, kind of still make a living at it?
That's a good question. I mean, there's lots of good models out there. A lot of existing seed companies are looking for organic growers to contract with and those kind of things. But I'm not too up on that. But there's definitely a lot of different models out there, and there's no doubt that there's still a high demand for heirloom vegetable seeds.
Lori sent us an email to say that your space, including the farm, the buildings, and the gift shop, is such a nice spot to stop and visit. And I got to believe that part of your ability to keep up with this work is, you know, the ability to have an attractive place for people to come and, you know, to buy some things in the gift shop. And that's got to help the overall business.
Oh, for sure. Indeed. Yeah, we want more people to come out and see the work that we're doing all the time. Yeah, and all of that helps. You know, the catalog helps us complete the work related to the gene bank and the preservation of the collection. And it all helps. And we could still use more as a nonprofit.
Oh, yeah, I'm very sure of that. And I'm, you know, as I'm looking through this, your catalog, I've been talking about fruits and vegetables, but you have a fairly extensive section on flowers, too.
Sure, yep.
Toward the back of the book. And it looks like, as I look at these vegetables, though, oh, my gosh, I want to try so many of them. Now, there's an heirloom. Let me tell you, I don't know if it's negative side, but for me, one of the heirlooms that I really wanted to try and did try, and tried a couple of years, was Brandywine tomatoes. And I love the tomato taste, but I get a lot of cat facing with those tomatoes.
Sure.
What am I doing wrong, or is it just something that's part of the makeup of that particular type of tomato?
I would say a lot of the times, at least in my experience, that kind of comes back to watering. And I don't know, do you water your tomatoes, or do you just allow the natural?
No, I try to keep an inch a week.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing the right things there, so I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head what could help you more than that. Just definitely not overwatering the tomatoes, because they can do pretty good without water.
What are the things that should be in the ground? What are the things that should be? Well, there's not a lot in the ground here in Wisconsin. We've got snow on the ground is what we've got in Wisconsin. You probably have a little in Iowa, too.
So, we do.
Yeah, so there's not going to be a whole lot of planting of anything outside, at least for several days. I'm wondering, what should we be ready to get in the ground right away when we can, as soon as we can? And then what should we have already started, or what should we be starting right now indoors?
Sure. As far as indoors, I'm sure there are people getting their tomatoes and peppers started, but we don't here. Um, we've we've kind of learned that we get them started in about 2 weeks from now. So actually, and I'm sort of perpetuating this, but I would recommend not starting those things because I hear a lot of people getting their tomatoes and peppers started a little bit too early. Really about 6 to 7 weeks before your last frost date or Memorial Day is about the right time to do it.
Yeah.
But as far as what we have going in the greenhouses right now, primarily the main thing that comes to mind is your onions and your leeks and those kind of things.
So those should be going in?
Yeah, those should probably already be in. I would get those sown already if you haven't already.
All right, so Brian Stewart, go ahead, Brian.
And I would just say that as far as things coming up for the greenhouse, you know, all your brassicas, broccoli, and those kind of things are definitely right around the corner here, and even lettuces and those kind of things. And as far as direct seeding out into the garden, I think your beets and your carrots and all those root crops are as soon as the ground can be worked and the garden can be prepped, you can go ahead and get those in.
I got a little story for you. Somebody from here at Wisconsin Public Radio, his name shall be, we shall keep his name to ourselves, has already planted several things. We had some warm weather a week ago, and so he's got seeds in the ground for peas and some other cold season crops. So
I can see that happening, yeah.
Whether or not he's going to have, you know, of course, this weather, his seeds haven't sprouted and aren't up yet, so he's probably just fine.
Yep.
But you wouldn't want to have your seeds up, your sprouted seeds showing in through the ground right now here in Wisconsin, I don't think.
And it's those temperatures are what'll get you, you know, as long as they don't drop too low into the 20s, he'll be all right.
We got Kathy on from Richland County with a question. Kathy, are you there?
I am here.
What can we do for you?
Thanks. Good morning. Several years ago, a friend of mine obtained some beans, dry shell beans, from a member of Seed Savers Exchange, and she called them beautiful beans. Now, what they look like is they're very similar looking to a yin yang, only they're maroon and white, and I've been planting them and saving them. I think they're half runners. What my question is, and I've done some poking around online, the closest thing that I can find that resembles this bean, and they just plain called it a beautiful bean, is what's called an Annie Jackson. I just kind of want to know if this, and this Annie Jackson is originally from Russia, I guess. So I just kind of am curious as to the real name for this bean. And if I can't find it, can I send it into Seed Savers Exchange and have somebody identify it for me?
Well, that's definitely a real possibility. But that's I'll take the time to ask Larry maybe if he can get my email or your guys' email, and then I can get those questions to the relevant people here at Seed Savers Exchange, because organizationally I'm by no means going to have all the answers, but I'd love to help get them answered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Beautiful Bean is one that, well, actually, we have a link on our Facebook page to the Seed Savers Exchange.
Okay.
Can you post, could Kathy, like, for example, post a couple of photos of the bean? Along with
sure.
the question, because I bet
yep.
okay. a bean person is going to probably know that bean, especially if you give the sort of the history of it, including it was called Beautiful Bean and so forth.
Right, and it has to have a real name. And I was just curious. Yeah,
that's kind of actually kind of cool. And well, so you obviously like them.
Oh yeah, they're delicious. They're a little more touchy to grow than like a yin yang, but they're just so unusual looking, and I don't ever see them in any heirloom catalogs ever.
Oh, very
yeah.
interesting. Even so, not
know,
even
I
the
also
seed
do
savers?
Like Tiger Eyes and Jacob's Cattle, and but yeah, those are just a few of the varieties. And this, I mean, just a plain old beautiful bean has to have a history and a name. And
Oh, for sure. Thank you so much.
All right, I'll drop an email and maybe throw in a picture.
Yeah, that would be probably get you a pretty quick response.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And I'm happy to share my email, Larry, as well, and I can get those to the correct people.
Okay, and I think Brianna, do you have Brian's email as well already? No, she's putting her thumb down. So can you give it to us right now?
Yep, it's just Bryan, Brian, at seedsavers.org.
Oh, pretty straightforward.
Pretty simple.
Yeah. Okay. Kathy, thanks again. And you know what? With her talk about this, reminded me, it'd be kind of fun to hear from others if you have some favorite heirloom that you grow and that you like. We'd love to hear from you about it. Give us a little clue as to what you like to grow in the heirloom area. Love to hear that. Diane in Cornucopia up next. Hi, Diane. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question for Brian is regarding a squash that I was given last year, as you know, the squash, and then the seeds that someone gave me too. And it's called an ancient squash. And I Googled it, and it came up to be something out of Canada that they found buried somewhere in some earthenware pot. But is this really true, or is this just kind of a squash that people are calling an ancient squash that are making the rounds? It was a large orange one.
Yep.
That's another one that I'm definitely not going to be able to answer, but I would love to pass that question along to some other staff members here at Seed Savers.
Okay, so you haven't heard of squash out of Canada about 10 years ago, and they're kind of getting down into the U.S. now. That was what I found out.
But, yeah, and that does sound familiar, but I don't have anything to add to that. I'm sorry.
So I just email you, and you could pass on the question. I don't have a picture of it anymore. We ate it, but quite a few seeds.
Oh.
Great.
There are a couple of stories that have gone on regarding ancient squashes. One that's actually tied to Wisconsin and Door County. So it may well be that somebody from Brian's end can answer this, the Canadian one. I hadn't heard that particular story or that particular experience. So by all means, Diane, forward that on and then, Brian, if you can let us know, because I'm sure other people now on our Facebook page are saying, wait a minute, I want to know about this ancient squash, too.
Okay.
I'd be happy to.
Maybe you could even answer it online for us or have somebody answer it on our Facebook page. That would be wonderful.
Okay. Sure, yeah. Somebody might be doing it right now that's listening in.
Okay, good.
Okay.
All right, well, so keep looking at our Facebook page, Diane, at the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. Can you join in with your question or maybe your comment or maybe your experience? Love to hear from you. What's your favorite heirloom variety that you like to grow? Have you had experience with Seed Savers Exchange? Love to hear. If you're a member, love to hear about that as well. Tim in Grant County, up to you now. Thanks, Tim.
Yes, this isn't about heirloom things, but just a question about raising onions.
Sure.
Last July or August, the hardware store had a closeout on the onion sets. I planted a bunch of them. Some of them grew and were harvestable, but when I picked them in November, there were a bunch of them that were still green. They still had the green part. You know, they were still growing. They hadn't formed full bulbs. Some of them were just the size of a thumb. Some of them had a little bit of a bulb. I picked them all thinking they'd die off and dry out, but they didn't. They're still alive. Would it make any sense, or would it just be a waste of time to try planting those? What would they do? What would come of them?
So they're still living, as far as you can see, Tim.
Oh yeah, they were down in the base. They were in a basement, just in a 5-gallon bucket, and they're still as green as can be. And I mean, they'd take off, I think, if I put them in the ground.
Wow, Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you go for it. You'll whether they bulb up or not, I'm not sure, but you'll definitely get something edible off of them.
All right.
And they definitely will likely go to flower as well.
Okay, thank you
all
very
right.
much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And if they go to flower, then they go to seed?
Exactly, yep.
So Tim might even be able to harvest the seeds off those?
He probably could. There's probably a few other factors he wants to consider before doing that. But I would assume that those would go to flower in this coming spring, because they're in their second year. They're biennials, and
sure,
they've been vernalized. The plants have been vernalized, so that equals a recipe for going to flower.
Okay, there we go. Caroline in Wonder Lake, Illinois, up next. Hi, Caroline.
I'm looking for some help growing some, I'm not sure how to say it, zabruni shallots.
Shallots, okay.
And I had did a little reading, and it was saying when they get to a certain height, seedlings, to cut them back?
Yeah, I'm not so sure that you have to do that. But it's probably that it will encourage more shallots to form, or like, bigger shallots.
And can I do these in containers, like big trays?
Definitely.
And
do you mean get them started in trays?
Well, actually, no. I wanted to grow them. Like,
Do you have seed, or do you have the actual clone?
I have the seed.
Okay. Yeah, I would. You can definitely grow them in pots. That's easy. Yep.
You'd need about what,
containers?
Yeah, you'd need what, about a foot of soil.
Yep. I mean, at least 10 inches of
about 10 inches of soil.
And medium,
when you
cut
the tops back, that encourages the onions to grow or the shallots to grow.
You know,
I'm not sure exactly why they're suggesting that.
You know what I'd do, Carolyn?
Mm-hmm.
I'd cut half of them.
There you go.
I'd cut half of them. I'd do my own little experiment.
Well, thank you.
that's what I'd do, and then check it out and see how it all works out. Talking with Brian Stewart today, field manager at Seed Savers Exchange. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we visit with Brian Stewart of Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa. Great to have him along. He's the field manager at Seed Savers Exchange. And I'm hoping you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe your experiences with heirlooms, heirloom varieties or heirloom seeds. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Judy in Eau Claire has something for us next. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I wanted to mention that last year I bought some of Grandpa Ott's Morning Glories, and I really love the picture of them going up over the barn, and I thought it was such a neat story, so I thought you could talk about your Grandpa Ott's Morning Glories. And then I was also wondering if I were going to collect and save those seeds going forward, you know, what would the best way to do that.
All right. And so those, you planted them and got them to go?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. All right. Well, what about those grandma or grandpa?
Grandpa.
Grandpa Ott. So,
yeah.
There we go. Okay, Grandpa Ott's Morning Glories.
Yep, that's one of our original varieties. That's one of Diane's grandfather's varieties that we've been maintaining for a long time now, over 40 years, I suppose. As far as saving seed from it, I'm not exactly sure, but I have not done it. I know that Diane just relies on it to self seed here every year. So if you kind of want it, you're going to have to catch it before it drops seed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it'll regrow then.
Yep. Exactly.
So if you just leave it alone, is it just going to regrow?
Yep, and it's dry seeded. So I would definitely not. Again, I don't have any experience with this particular crop, but I would definitely encourage you to watch it closely, and then attempt to collect the seeds. But I do know that a lot of people just rely on it to self seed and grow again the next year.
Oh, there we go. Not much easier than that, Judy.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, thanks for calling. Kevin in Bellevue, Iowa, up next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. A couple things. I've been gardening for a few years and have stopped at Seed Savers. I'm trying to get up there again this year. My soil is pretty compacted. I did make about 14 boxes, but it's only about 6 to 8 inches of soil. I'm going to raise that up higher. I think my soil is... you know, I try to add some good things to it, but how do I go about getting that last 8 inches to, do I buy, go out and buy topsoil or and other types of things to get that top 8 inches to be much more enriching for growing vegetables?
Okay. What do you think, Brian?
I mean, compost definitely generally is the best thing to add, but I wonder if the caller is talking about on the flat, like a normal garden on the flat, or if he's talking about in raised beds.
I built about a 2x8s or 2x6s and put soil that was nearby as well as some compost and just basically put it in these 4x8 boxes, and I want to raise the sides up to 12 inches. So I didn't know what to do with that additional space and what I should put to enrich it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, for the first thing that comes to mind is I think your raised beds are plenty deep. I mean, growing annual vegetables, you know, everything, you know, we talked about 10 inches with another caller before, but the reality is that you can do pretty well on less than that. Because some of these things are definitely deep-rooted, but when we're only growing them on an annual cycle, they can do okay in much less than that. But you definitely want healthy soil as well, so definitely I'm from an organic perspective especially, I would just keep adding, you know, well-aged compost or even some manure to your existing beds.
Yeah.
And basically get that from where? Where would you recommend that? Because obviously I can't grow. There's not enough table scraps and things like that from my garden, from my kitchen to do that. So are you thinking buying it in a...
Prepared, yeah.
Yeah, the easiest thing to do, not knowing your area and those kind of things, is just go down to the hardware store and buy some stuff in bags, especially if you're just talking about a relatively small area like that. But I would say that there's always better places to buy compost than that. And I know Cosmo has a pretty good product, and I believe they're out of Wisconsin.
Okay.
It is a company, yeah. So Cosmo is a brand you can look for.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Kevin. Appreciate it. And Richard in Ettrick, your turn now. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Larry. A great show. My wife and I have been ordering from Seed Savers for a number of years, and particularly like the tomatoes. Our favorite is the Hungarian Heart. It's a real meaty tomato, and Italian heirloom. We tried the German Pink, but we had difficulty in figuring out when they're actually ripe because they don't get that deep red color. And then also the Anna Schwartz Hubbard squash. It's a smaller squash, but a real good keeper. And I'd just like to say the only complaint we have with Seed Savers is I order too many seeds and my wife starts too many tomato plants, and then we end up providing for all the neighborhood and everyone we ever knew.
There you go, Richard. I bet you've heard that story before, Brian.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I know that everyone here appreciates to hear those stories. Everyone on staff likes to hear that. So, and lots of them are listening, by the way, too.
Thanks, Richard.
Yeah, bye-bye.
I appreciate it. By the way, how do you become a member of Seed Savers Exchange?
I would just start at our website, seedsavers.org, and yeah, that's members are the most important thing to us, and we really appreciate it, and there's lots of good benefits.
Is there a sort of an annual fee, or what, how does that work?
Yep, it starts out the lower end of the bracket is $25 for the year.
Okay, and then it goes up from there, and you know,
to $50, $100, $250, and there's a $500 level, and then a lifetime membership is $1,500.
So there you go, and you can do that right online.
Yep, you can do that right online, or even by calling in as well.
All right, there we go. Jamie in West Allis up next. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Sure.
I order through SSE frequently myself, and nothing but good things to say. I do have a question, though, about peppers. I'm going to grow a savory habanero this year, and I'm really interested in it, and I'm wondering how can I keep that particular plant from cross-pollinating with the other plants in my garden?
Sure. First of all, that pepper species in particular is pretty promiscuous, so you do have to be even more worried than usual about keeping those plants isolated from your other peppers. So it sounds like you grow quite a few peppers, other peppers as well. So your best option might be to either blossom bag those flowers to make sure that they self-pollinate themselves, or you can build some sort of an impromptu cage or tent over the top of that planting of that habanero and prevent foreign pollen via bees from coming in and crossing that pepper up.
Oh. So if I use the bag, so then that's not going to stop bees from getting in there, or do I have to hand pollinate at that point?
Nope. You should. There's definitely products out there, and we do carry one in the Seed Savers catalog too, called a blossom bag that you can tie on and prevent. Most, if not all, of potential crossing, but oftentimes in the past, I've used a piece of Remay or what's the general word for it? Kind of frost protection blanket stuff,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just tie that over the flower before it opens, and then monitor that, and then once that flower. Once that fruit begins to develop, then you can remove that and tie something to mark that was a self-pollinated flower, and then you can just save the seeds from those individual fruits. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. I thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. So that a good pepper, Jamie. Oh, we lost him already. So do you like that pepper, Brian?
I don't know that I'm exactly familiar with that one. I get so much good access to the collection peppers every year that unfortunately I don't do a lot of growing, gardening, non-work related much anymore.
Nina in Stevens, Michigan up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I've been a member of the Seed Savers for many years. I haven't been the last five, but I haven't stopped breeding the rare and open pollinated seeds. My expertise is in the vine crop pollination.
Excellent.
And as far as the pollination of peppers, I can't tell you, but actually when you go to pollinate a vine crop, you want to tape close the flower and then take a male flower. These are before, night before, you tape the opening flowers before they're open. You pick the male, pick off the leaves around, the staples around the edge, and rub the pollen onto the female flower. And then you tape the flower shut so no other insect or bee can get in it. And then you will tie I use a surveyor tape, bright colored surveyor tape, and tie that around the stem of the female flower so that it will be able to be seen when the seed is ripe.
Oh, man, that's there's a fair amount of work to that, Brian. Is that a similar kind of process that you might use for some plants?
Yeah, sure, yeah. We use a very similar process for squash that the caller is describing. And, yeah, she does sound like she knows her stuff. And the difference between the vine crops and the pepper is that the peppers have perfect flowers and where the male and female parts are within the same flower. So it'll self-pollinate on its own, even if you prevent any insects or human interaction to take place. So that's why that works for the peppers, but it wouldn't work for the vine crops, because the vine crops they have separate male and female flowers on the same plant. So it requires that a bee or a human being make those crosses. Hopefully that makes sense to everyone.
Yeah. Nina, thank you so much.
Yes. Well, yeah. I'm still searching for this rare, true bicolor pear gourd. It's a people ornamental. It is 5.5 inches long and teardrop shaped. It's half yellow and half green with no stripes. And I'd sure appreciate trying to find it.
You know, we've got next week on Garden Talk, we're going to be talking about gourds.
And okay, good.
And we have an expert on gourds who's going to be with me to talk about them. And the Wisconsin Gourd Festival, even though you're over in Michigan, Nina, you might want to come and visit it as well. So I hope you'll tune in again next week on Garden Talk, because we'll certainly be talking about gourds. Our guest right now, Brian Stewart, field manager at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about heirloom plants and seeds today with our guest, Brian Stewart. He's the farm field manager at Seed Savers Exchange, a degree in agronomy from Purdue University. Been working with vegetable crops and doing seed production professionally for about 10 years now. Happy to answer your questions when you call in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And some callers online. We've got some Facebook questions. So let's go back to the phones and talk to Marianne in La Crosse next. Marianne, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to just give a shout-out of a compliment to Seed Savers and just tell you that it's not just kind of what they do that's so important, but as a place, it is a beautiful farm, visitor center, natural area to visit as a family. And we have tried to do that in each season of the last 5 years of our son's life. And he has gardened with Seed Savers seeds, and he makes choices. He grows white carrots, yellow carrots, round carrots, purple corn, purple beans. He picks 4 varieties of small size tomatoes that he himself can harvest and eat. And a deep value of mine. We are Seed Savers members. We live in La Crosse, and I just want to say the value goes far beyond just food on the table and preserving seeds in the vault. There's a social and community value to this place that's just, you can't match that.
Oh, Marianne, that's wonderful. How old is your son now?
He's 5.5, and so he has plans for our garden this year.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and this year he's like, I think I just want purple and yellow carrots. We grew yellow carrots, white and round orange last year. But now he wants purple, and we looked at the catalog, and sure enough, there are some. But, you know, just we did use the catalog, and we ordered the white carrots last year, and when they came in the mail, this packet of seeds, there was just something so beautiful about planting them with him. And I get emotional about it. It's just a really valuable place on a human scale to just building community.
You sound like a pretty good mom, too, Marianne.
Well, I try. I try. But I do think getting kids outdoors and actually passing this on to the next generation and preserving this is at the heart of what they're doing and the value to people. To humans. So
I would agree with that. And thank you so much. Brian, I'm sure you have a comment as well.
Well, I just said thank you, and that was a beautiful story, and we love to hear that stuff.
Yeah, I bet you get that. I hope you hear that. I hope there's more people out there doing that.
Yep, yeah. I mean, we get some good stories every once in a while, for sure, yep.
Well, Marianne, thank you again. I really appreciate your call.
Well, we will be there in May for their seedling sale. So.
Ah, all right, there we go.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. So you've got a seedling sale in May.
That's right. Yep, and there'll be quite a few. We're starting to grow seedlings from the collection too, though. So there'll be a lot more varieties available for certain crops than people are even used to.
Oh, and when is the? How long does the sale last, and when is it in May?
I actually don't have that in front of me right now. I wish that I did.
We'll look it up.
But we'll post that on your
Facebook
page.
Yeah, that would be wonderful if you could do that. I'd really appreciate it.
And
good. And let's get your call. If you have a question or comment or an experience to share, I love that last experience from Marianne. We actually have had many good experiences shared here on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk today. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. You know, I do want to go back to something in the first hour. Someone called in, a lady who was doing some really cool work with gourds. And I said that next week, and in fact, on next week, Friday, we will have the Gourd Gal coming on to talk about gourds and the Gourd Society's annual festival. And I wanted to bring that up because the festival is April 9th, and it's at Obrick Gardens in Madison. It's really, if you're interested in gourds, boy, that's the place to be. I can tell you that for sure. So that I wanted to mention that. Roxanne in Clark County couldn't stay with us, but called in to talk about how she saves seeds from microgreens she grows. However, she's been having trouble doing that with beets and chard. Any advice that you could offer about saving seeds from these vegetables, Brian?
Sure. The trouble she's probably having is primarily that they're biennial crops. So they're just not engineered to produce seed in their first year. They have to go through a process called vernalization, which is essentially winter. And that's probably her biggest trouble that she's running into there, I would imagine.
So what is she? She just she's what does she do then in that situation?
So if I was her, I would she's growing them, the varieties, as microgreens, which just to go forward with that method is pretty hard because you're planting at really high densities. So if I were her, I would pull out some of that. I would pull out that seed, specifically the beets, or transplant some of those plants and pot them up and let them grow a little bit bigger, give them the room that they need to grow. Maybe just grow, instead of growing them in the mix, grow some of them like a traditional beet, and then bring. She'd have to either in our climate, she'd have to bring those beets in the winter time and overwinter them indoors, because it's much too cold to overwinter beets in northern Iowa and in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a process, and that's why biennials are a little more challenging than some other things. But that's one of the biggest things about growing biennials. You have to keep it alive through the winter. But I hope the caller. I think another important thing here that we're talking about is it's going to be hard to grow to even the annuals to produce seed when you're growing them in high densities. So she's going to need to pull those varieties out of that mix that she wants to maintain, and first of all, grow them a little bit more traditionally, so that way that they can bulk up and produce healthy seed. And then the biennial ones, another step in the process is that they're going to have to overwinter them and then produce seed from them once they're planted out the following year.
How many seeds would you know, let's say you've got a couple of two or three or four or five beets. Are you going to get a lot of seed from an individual that, if you're able to do it, as you suggest, overwinter and so forth?
Yeah, that's one thing we haven't really talked on is at all today is sort of the specifications that you need to meet to produce good quality seed.
Yeah.
From different varieties, and beets in particular, she's going to want to grow at least 20 plants at the absolute minimum. And beets are wind pollinated, so she needs sort of that 20 plant population at least just to ensure good pollination, and also avoid inbreeding depression and all these other things. And again, 20 is the absolute minimum. We would, for preserving rare varieties and potentially extinct varieties like we do here at the farm, we want to capture all the genetic diversity within a variety and also avoid inbreeding depression. So for beets, our absolute minimum would be about 100 plants. But if it's a variety that's relatively common, I think she can get away with growing out a block of 20 of them in the second year. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes good sense. Facebook comment from Lisa. She says she orders seeds from Seed Savers every year. Has a pest control situation, obviously not from the seeds. She said they had issues with aphids, you know, and even early in the season, her heirloom tomatoes are taking a kind of a serious hit on some of those. Any suggestions for dealing with that?
With aphids?
Yeah, aphids.
Mostly. Yeah, I mean, aphids are one of those things where maybe the kind of the first line of defense is just going out in the garden and blasting the plants with some water is a simple, safe way to kind of to do those things. And then there's also, you know, there's some organic pesticides that are available, such as, you know, just horticultural soap or pyrethrins and those kind of things if things get really bad. And then obviously, you know, we do a little bit of this here. We'll release some natural predators into the garden, and they seem to have naturalized to some degree. And ladybugs, for example, would be something good to attack those aphids. But lots of simple options, I think.
Robert in Grant County up next. Hi, Robert.
Good morning. I was calling. I run into a lot of younger people, students at UW and stuff, and everybody has this this fascination with the post-apocalyptic society and preparing for it, especially if the grid goes down. And I wondered if you guys had suggestions or put together a little packet, you know, maybe some tomato seeds and some carrot seeds and stuff that people could just store, you know, and plant if the apocalypse happens.
No. There's something for the marketing gang over at Seed Savers Exchange, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, by default, that's kind of what we're always doing. So there's not a specific package, you know, apocalypse packet, seed variety package available right now, I don't think, but it's definitely something that we could look into. But you don't, you know, that would just be a marketing gimmick. You can, you know, save and store all these seeds to the best of your ability, and those will be meeting your needs.
Well, we don't have
that. The best thing is to learn to be a good grower and learn to be a seed saver. That's your big line of defense there.
What is the best way to save seed from one year to the next?
That's a big question. Obviously you have to have a plan, and then you have to know all the different requirements of each crop type that you're going to try to save seed from. Those are always important things. And then learning, you know, learning the details of when to harvest and how to store the seed properly and all that kind of stuff. It's a simple thing, but it's a big question when you're kind of talking about all these different vegetables at one time.
So let's say I get 10 packs of seed from Seed Savers Exchange, and I use about half the seed in each packet. So I got all that seed left over.
Yep.
Is there one place I can put them?
For you know, a dry place, a cool dry place is the best place to generally store seed. But obviously, that's kind of more from use from year to year to year. In the freezer is the best place for really long term storage.
Oh, so how long?
But again, the best thing to do is to just be always saving seed and bulking up your collection on an annual cycle, because you always have to regenerate things. They're not going to live forever. So the best thing to do is to know how to do it and just keep doing it.
Accumulating. If you freeze seed, let's say just a normal freezer, I throw some seed in my freezer, how long can I? I mean, I'm sure that the germination is going to start to lose effectiveness over time.
Exactly, and that's where you know, if you really want to be doing this right, you're gonna want to take some of that seed out of the freezer and do some simple germination tests on it and those kind of things, just to know when do you need to regenerate this seed again. You know, is it below 50% germination? Well, that might be the moment in which you. When it's time to grow it out again and save a fresh batch.
Yeah, makes sense. Cindy in Eau Claire called in to let us know that L.E. Phillips Library in Eau Claire has a seed library, which I thought was pretty cool. I think Brianne put a link up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Just go there if you want to learn more about what is in the L.E. Phillips Library in Eau Claire. I didn't know that we had seed libraries. I figured maybe you guys might have a seed library at Seed Savers, but maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, our seed library is in that sense pretty much the collection and the membership and the participatory preservation. But yeah, seed libraries at local libraries are gaining in popularity, and we completely support them, and they're wonderful.
Well, that's pretty cool. We have someone else on Facebook wondered, and you talked about this earlier, but maybe let's go over it again. How do you become a member, and sort of what are the benefits of being a member at the various member levels?
Sure. You know, to me the biggest advantage to being a member is just kind of the community and the connection that these people are going to have through the yearbook and through the exchange, in which they can have access to, you know, these 16,000 unique varieties that are in the seed exchange. That's just a huge benefit there. because you know, most of these varieties are in addition to what folks can get in traditional seed catalogs and from traditional seed companies.
It's over $25, you get a pretty good deal right there.
Well, exactly. You get access to thousands and thousands of varieties that aren't available anywhere but from our farm and through our membership and that participatory preservation. So those are big benefits. Obviously discounts at the visitor center and through our catalog and all those kinds of things as well.
And I think it was Mary Ann who said they visit at all four seasons, which I think is kind of a cool thing to do. And you, I'm sure, sort of have every quarter, there's sort of like something new to see.
Yeah, I mean, we have events all through the year. That's a true thing, and that's the other bonus of the membership is complete access to member only events that we have, and then discounts and those kind of things to other events.
So, what's your favorite? Do you have a favorite vegetable out there that you work with? A favorite heirloom?
That's a good question. I'm fortunate enough to have an amazing job where I get to see new varieties every single year. So I sort of have a favorite variety on an annual cycle versus an all-time favorite. But I think the easiest answer to that is I love pink tomatoes. And like German pink and there's many, many other similar varieties. And those are some of my favorites.
Now, why are those really just really tasty?
I think so. I don't know how to explain them exactly, but yeah, I love them. And your caller said he had trouble. An earlier caller said he had trouble determining when they were ripe. And that's something that we deal with here on the farm for the right time to harvest for seed is that we have all different kinds of tomatoes, every color that is out there. And, you know, feel is the best way, in my opinion, to determine when a tomato is ripe.
So not rock hard, but so with a little give?
A little bit of give. Yeah, if not a lot of give, you know, it's gonna melt in your mouth if there's a lot of give. But yeah, exactly.
Well, I tell you, what's your next event is you got an event in May, right? If I'm not mistaken. May 7th, I think it was.
I found that here in the office too. So May 7th is. The Spring Garden School and the plant sale.
So the garden school and the plant sale, and we can obviously people can learn more about that by going online. And we have a link on our Facebook page, but the link is, what is it, seedsavers.org?
Exactly, yep.
Well, Brian, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. And I tell you what, I'm looking at those beets again. and dreaming about some beets that, when you cut them open, look like a target. They look beautiful. Yeah.
Get them ready because it'll be time to plant them here shortly.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Brian Stewart is the field manager at Seed Savers Exchange with degrees in agronomy a degree in agronomy from the University of Purdue. And working with professionally in this area for 10 years. The Seed Savers catalog is really a lot of fun to look at, I can tell you. Well, it's like every seed catalog. They all look just wonderful, and you can dream, can't you, about all the good things coming out of them? That's what we do here on Garden Talk. Thank you so much for listening. Monday, the weather guys are back, so we'll visit with them. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.